I know more than a few people who are feeling apprehensive about some AI entity taking over their jobs, or about a future where they have to work with robo-colleagues. I mean, maybe it's a well-founded fear. After all, how will we share tasks? And will doing that actually make me question my own judgment? Will the tech be keeping tabs on my performance for my boss? And can I ask the robo-colleagues what they did on the weekend? Well, there are lots of researchers out there trying to get answers to many of these very questions. That's because while AI will surely take over some jobs, lock, stock, and barrel, and I say that as someone who writes for a living, the more likely scenario is that we humans will have to share our jobs with AI. It can be challenging enough to work with fellow humans and understand their emotions and thinking styles. What will it be like working with super smart non-humans? Welcome to this episode of AI Reality Check. I'm your host, Meredith Dalt, a journalist and media producer at Smith School of Business, and today we're talking about human-AI collaboration. We have two guests today from Smith School of Business who know a thing or two about AI in the workplace, Tracy Jenkin and Anton Ovchinnikov. Dr. Jenkin is an associate professor at Smith and a faculty affiliate at the Vector Institute for Artificial Intelligence. And Dr. Ovchinnikov, who was our guest in episode 2 of this series, is a distinguished professor of management analytics. The two are currently working on a couple of research projects that explore human-AI collaboration and cognitive processes. Welcome, Tracy and Anton. It's great to have you here.
A pleasure.
Great to be here.
So I'm going to put this to both of you, and then I'll just let you take turns on kind of responding. But humans have been collaborating with technology since before the Industrial Revolution. What makes this AI collaboration different?
Well, if we think about it, when we've been working with systems over the past, say, 20 or 30 years, much of that has been sort of automating things that we already know how to do, but it's sort of, you know, automating that, right? So we know how accounting systems work and we can do the addition, et cetera. However, it's just a lot of work. So we get them to automate that to make things go faster and smoother. With artificial intelligence and the tasks that we're asking it to do, in many cases, we are asking it to potentially, I guess, work with much more data. We're asking it to do things that are much more complex. So things that we might not be able to do ourselves, right? To generate some sort of insights and patterns across multiple different dimensions and variables that the human brain can't process. So we might not know what the right answer is. And that's the difficulty, is that to be able to look at the results and assess, is that right? And that's particularly difficult if it's different from what we expect.
Got it. Okay, Anton, you want to weigh in?
I think that the AI systems are just a lot more capable, and that's what makes things different. Now, they're also capable in a way that is different for us. I think that if you think about historically or evolutionary, right? So going back from the hunter-gatherer societies, right? We had, you know, bulls to help us on the field and so on. So these were like powerful devices that were making us stronger. Right, but now we really never as, and so we evolved, right? This happened over hundreds of years, right? Then we had machines, you know, ships, you know, automobiles and whatnot, right? Airplanes and all the kind of industrial machinery, if you can think about that. But we really never had like brain machinery, right? Something that extends us intellectually. And that's what's different.
Right. That's a good way to put it. So can you give us a big picture view of the different schools of thought and the big questions that are being asked by researchers who are studying human AI collaboration?
I'll maybe start with the fact that one major branch of research is looking at how humans adhere to the recommendations of these AI systems. And what we're finding is that in some cases there is aversion or algorithmic aversion, where individuals just don't want to adhere to the recommendations of those algorithms, those AI systems. They'd rather listen to and adhere to the advice of humans or themselves, even though the algorithms outperform humans. On the other hand, there's also algorithmic appreciation, where individuals will just go along with the AI or algorithm's advice, even though it might be wrong. And so that's one large branch of research. We're looking at explanations. That's another branch of research. So, you know, in many cases, there's a look at how can we make algorithms interpretable and have some sort of explanation, that meaning it's a black box, the algorithm, so we don't know how it made its decision. In some cases, the nature of the algorithm itself can be interpreted. For example, a decision tree, we can follow along down the tree branches to understand what factors influence the outcome, the decision. In other algorithms, like a neural network, it's very black box. We don't know how the inputs got translated into the outputs, meaning the decision or the recommendation. And therefore, we want some sort of explanation to say, hey, how did you actually come to this decision, so that I know why I was granted credit or I was highlighted as a fraudulent case. So that's another branch. And beyond that is, when do we want to have those explanations for those recommendations? And so that's part of the research that we've been looking at, is when do individuals seek explanations from algorithms differently from human versus AI advisors?
On my end, let me put another kind of branch of work on the table, which would be delegation. Again, think of this an analogy to a tractor, right? It's a human decides that they want to go and work in a field. They go and they start a tractor, essentially saying, hey, let's go and do some work, right? Now, with AI tools, it's very unclear whether it should be human in the driver's seat and then asking AI for help when the human wants it, or AI should be in the driver's seat and asking human for help when it wants it. And in fact, there is some work, not our work, so some other work by colleagues at a different university, that in fact show that it's the second approach that usually works better. That is AI asking humans for help rather than humans asking AI for help. And very interesting, what very interestingly in their study is this notion about kind of how well do you know what you know? And it turns out that the machines can be very well calibrated. That is, when they don't know something, right, they would realize they don't know it. While for humans, it's very hard to be calibrated, right? For humans, essentially, are not very good at knowing when they don't know something and therefore asking for help in those situations.
Can we sort of get into the weeds a little more around what AI-human collaboration actually looks like or could look like? Any use cases you want to point to just so we really understand the big picture?
Yeah, of course. Let me go first. Now, think of, let's say, planning or purchasing something, right? Numerous organizations need to decide how much of certain stuff to buy, right? Or generally speaking, let me say book, right? That could be a procurement of inventory in retail. That could be booking the number of nurses that you need to have on a particular day and so on, right? So these kind of tasks, right? They're generally speaking fall under the decision-making under uncertainty, right? Had I known for sure that I would need 17 nurses between 5 and 7 next Wednesday, right, I would book directly exactly 17 nurses. But the problem, of course, is I don't know exactly how many nurses I need. And that's the problem, right? So now it's a forecasting task, right? And these forecasting tasks and a collaboration could take a form of the following kind. For example, an AI tool gives a projection about how many nurses it thinks would be necessary. And then the human can either adhere to that recommendation immediately. That is, let's say algorithm says, 19 nurses. And then the human says, sure, let's just go and kind of call 19 nurses to work on Wednesday. Or a human can change that recommendation to something else. All right, so that's one possible scenario.
Right. Okay. And did you want to weigh in, Tracy?
Yeah. And it's an interesting question because there's so many different flavors, I guess, of AI systems out there. So we can probably spend a long time thinking about this. But I'll add on to Anton's example, where we're trying to predict a specific number. There's also algorithms that would specify a category or decide on whether an event is likely to happen or not. So we can even think about that in the medical context of whether a patient has a particular disease, or in the business context, whether we think a particular case is fraudulent or whether we think a customer is likely to churn, meaning they're going to move from our organization to another organization. The other thing that we're seeing now with the advent of generative AI, so things like ChatGPT, which I think probably many of our listeners would be familiar with and probably have tried out, where in that case, generative AI, we can interface with it in natural language, and that either produce an image or produce some text. It might answer a question that we have in natural language or produce content in natural language. So, for example, I've been, I was recently needing to think of a title for a presentation. So I asked ChatGPT just to help me, get that creative juices going. I also sometimes ask it to help me with code if I'm unfamiliar with how to call a specific package or just need an assist on, how to frame a particular piece of code. And so those are just some additional examples of how we might be collaborating with these different forms and new forms of AI.
Let me add two more, one kind of generic and one from a recent personal experience. So think of these generative AI tools as a way of lowering the cost of intelligence. Right? That is, now it is cheaper to do a task with these tools than, let's say, with a human doing the same task. Now, what does it mean? It means that we can actually scale intelligence. Going back to my previous example, so imagine if these are not staffing of nurses, but let's say you have a whole bunch of different positions, and let's say nurses is an important position, therefore a manager may be thinking about this a lot. But let's say there is another position that is a lot less important, and so manager would naturally not really think about it much, or maybe think about it, let's say, only once a year, right? And there would be the same five, people of a particular kind who are always, invited to work in a particular shift. Again, with these tools, we can scale intelligence, that we can apply the same data-driven, rigorous thinking to staffing nurses as that we have been maybe doing in the past, right, to staffing everybody in our organization. And again, very similar example could be extended. That if you think of the inventory items, you would have some big items that sell a lot, and usually they attract a lot of attention. But there would be a lot of other items that sell very little, and oftentimes there is actually very little thought going in into how to deal with them. Again, with these AI tools, we can scale intelligence. The key point here is that the cost of intelligence has decreased, therefore we should apply it more. Now, if you want yet another example, and that's a personal one. So I have a rental house, and one of my tenants was moving out, and they asked for a reference letter for them to show to their kind of landlord in the next place where they're moving to. And I asked ChatGPT to help me with that reference letter. And before that, I thought for a few minutes about what would I write in my letter. And non-surprisingly, many of the things that I was thinking about, ChatGPT also suggested. But it also suggested something that I would not, that I had not thought about on my own, in particular, the fact that the tenant was very good at communication. And I thought, well, that's a very good point. I, as a landlord, would love to know that the tenant, notifies me whether there's a problem right away, that the tenant responds quickly if I want to send a technician to repair something. So these kind of things, again, you can think of them as kind of augmenting the intelligence, right? But that's like a second opinion on something, right? Eventually, I wrote a letter. To be honest, I found the ChatGPT's letter to be a bit too exaggerated, right? Not the way I would have done it. But the key point from this example is that there was this one thing that I did not think about, right? Just again because I gave it like 5 minutes of thought, right? So both of these examples fall into this kind of extending intelligence, right?
And of course, when it comes to writing, nobody likes a blank page. So why not get the computer to do that first draft for you?
Well, I mean, to be honest, in that case, that was not particularly helpful. That is what it wrote. I essentially had to delete it, but. The point is that it allowed me to expand my intelligence, right? And again, intelligence became cheaper. Maybe I could have consulted with another human about writing this letter. I hope you see my point, right?
Yeah,
as the cost of intelligence is going down, we need to have more of it, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of basic economics 101.
Yeah, that's great. Great examples. Thank you. I'm hoping the two of you can now, just for our audience, delve into a little bit of the work that you guys have been doing on the subject of human AI collaborations. I understand you have a couple of projects on the go. Tracy, do you want to just kick us off with telling us about some of these projects?
Yeah, so we've got two research programs that we've been working on. So the first one is about, I guess, more directly about AI and human collaboration. And that's where we're trying to understand, when do humans seek explanations? And do they do it differently when they're asking a human advisor versus an AI advisor? And then how do they adhere to that recommendation? Do they show some aversion? Do they show appreciation? What are the differences there? And so in that case, what we found is when an individual is presented with an unfavorable and an abnormal case, they will more likely seek an explanation from a human than an AI advisor. What we also found is that for the adherence to the recommendation, they sort of go the opposite way. When it's a favorable recommendation and they ask for an explanation, they're much more likely to actually adhere to the recommendation of a human advisor. On the other hand, for an AI advisor, when it's an unfavorable recommendation, so think of this as you have thought about a particular price for a rental unit of an online property rental system, and the advisor recommends that you actually lower your price. So you're like, oh, I don't really want to lower my price. That's unfavorable. And when you get that advice from an AI advisor, you are more likely to adhere to that advice than a human advisor.
Yeah, so you think that the AI advisor is more trustworthy in that instance?
That's what we found. And we found some other interesting things from looking at the comments from the participants, in that they, you know, in these cases, they weren't really asking for explanations from these AI advisors very often. And in those cases, we deduced that the reason was because they trusted the AI advisor more. But they also, some interesting outcomes were that they felt that in some cases they might not get an explanation from the AI advisor, right? Can an AI actually give you an explanation? And if it can give you an explanation, am I really going to understand what that explanation is, right? Am I going to get a big mathematical equation that I'm not going to really understand, or that's not really going to make sense to me?
So rather than questioning it, just go with it.
Exactly. Go along with the recommendation.
Okay. Did that surprise you? Did those results surprise you?
Yeah, I think they did. I see Anton wanting to jump in here too.
I think that in some sense they did, but in some sense they didn't, right? So the mental model that we have in this research kind of for what's going on in a person's head is it's a three-step process, right? So the step number one, am I really surprised so that I want to have an explanation? Then step two, if I ask for an explanation, will I get an explanation? And then if I get an explanation, will I be able to understand it, right? And what we find is that there are distinctions on all these three steps between humans and AIs, right? And perhaps the last one is maybe least surprising, in a sense that you kind of more or less confident that an explanation from human, you will be able to understand it. With AI, of course, I think more people doubt if they will be able to understand it. The more surprising is the first step, and that's what Tracy was alerting to, right, is that what people find surprising when they get it from a machine is different from when they get it from a human. And here is perhaps this, so Tracy will help me with the exact exact name for it, but here is this belief of machine superiority, right? Oh, it cranked all these gazillion of data points, and therefore it knows what it's talking about. Right, a human is still perceived to be kind of somewhat at a high level recommendation, intuition-based recommendation that is maybe a little bit similar to mine. Right, while the machine can be, it's allowed to be very different, right, because of this superior analytical ability.
Yeah, and let me just jump in there. There's a concept called perfect automation schema. So that's where we think the algorithm is going to be perfect, right? It's going to give us the right answer all the time, and so we might just trust in the algorithm because of that particular belief. The other side of that is when we see the algorithm err, we're much more critical of it. So we think, okay, well, you're not supposed to err. If you do err, then we're not going to trust you as much. We think you'll continue to err in the future. Whereas with humans, we sort of expect that we're going to make mistakes from time to time. Are a bit more forgiving of that. And just to build on what we've been talking about so far, what we've observed in the literature and it's built into our research model and experiment is that to know when an individual is going to seek an explanation, we've seen that it's when there's a surprising condition, right? There's something that is unexpected, and in particular, it's unfavorable. So that's what we've been trying to study. And when that, you know, differs in the human versus the AI advisor. And so again, based on that notion of the perfect automation schema, as Anton says, it's sort of, I guess, in a way expected that if we see the advice or the recommendation from the algorithm is different from our expectations, and even that is unfavorable, we kind of in our head say, oh, well, that's okay. It's an algorithm. It must know what it's doing. It must be the right answer. And in our particular experiment, we were never giving the wrong answer. We were giving, it was about sort of the expected value of the outcome. So even though it appeared that it was a lower price, the probability of success in renting this unit, for example, was higher. So the overall expected value of the outcome would be higher. And so in these cases, individuals went along with that to say, oh, it must be right. It's an algorithm. With a human, they weren't as trusting.
I think that the key point here is that lots of conversations about, you know, explainable AI, trustworthy AI, assumes that people would want an explanation and that getting an explanation would be helpful for their ultimate decision. We are questioning that very, very core question, right? The very core notion is that sometimes people will not be interested in explanation, and even worse, that sometimes getting an explanation can be worse than not getting an explanation.
Right.
So therefore, I think at a very high level, and that's where I think the implications are big, is that I don't think what this research suggests that it is certainly not as clear that we should always provide an explanation.
Ah, interesting. Okay. While I've got you on the mic, Anton, do you want to start telling us about the second research program that you guys have worked on?
Yeah, the second project that we also have with Tracy and one of my current PhD students, Yang Chen, is about biases of ChatGPT. And so, and it's another form of interaction between human and AI, and we actually have a sort of a mini research agenda there. So we initially started to look at just biases, and then we thought about how people will in practice interact with it. So we are changing that a little bit, but what's going on in that project is that we think of a typical business user in an operational context. Now think about a mom and pop store, right? One that does not have a sophisticated automated system that the big firm would have, and rather would therefore ask a generically intelligent tool like ChatGPT, let's say for advice about the procurement or about staffing or about some other operational decisions. And so that's, of course, is a form of interaction. In our current projects, we took, in academic research, what you need to understand is that you kind of somewhat tied to where the literature has been up to now. So we took some of the formulations of these problems from the existing literature, and we're checking how ChatGPT would perform on them as opposed to humans. But in the next wave of this research, we're thinking to even ask humans for these formulations, because that's another important question to study, right? So how will people ask the questions when they face a particular problem? You might have heard this notion of prompt engineering, right? And so sort of how will people prompt the system to get the answers to the questions that they want? That's the next wave of this research.
Yeah, and just to build on that, especially thinking about those listening to this session, if we think about some of the questions, if anyone has read the Daniel Kahneman book, Thinking Fast and Slow, those are some examples of the questions that we pose to ChatGPT. So there's the conjunction fallacy or the sunk cost fallacy or framing, those types of questions. And so we ask them of ChatGPT to see, does ChatGPT demonstrate the same biases that we do as humans, and thinking that it might because it's been trained on human data as well as tuned by humans. And so what we've been finding has been quite interesting in that in some cases it does show the same biases, in some cases it shows different biases. And in some cases, it just is getting the answers wrong. And what is also interesting in that as we're sampling, so for example, we might run the test 10 times or 100 times. So meaning we'll repeat the exact same question to ChatGPT to see, does it consistently give us the same answer? And it does not. And so that is very interesting too. So there's a lot to unpack, I think, in this research, but it's been very interesting so far.
And what will you do with this project, with this initiative?
And we, as academics, the first and primary goal was to write academic research studies and submit them for publications to top, like a very high level leading academic journals. And in fact, we have our two initial projects are getting some good traction at two very, very good, very high regarded scholarly journals. Of course, after that, right, what's known as a research mobilization or knowledge mobilization, right? It's taking part in podcasts like yours, right? to tell to generic audience about what this is. Now, again, so far we started, as Tracy mentioned, just with these human biases that are known from the literature. So again, Thinking Fast and Slow would be a great book that reviews sort of many of them. Right. And the reason we did that is because we need a comparative benchmark. Right. For example, if we're talking about, let's say, framing bias or sunk cost bias, then we would like to know what humans have been doing. Right. So that's why we are, as I mentioned, somewhat tied to the studies that we've done previously with humans. We now are just redoing them with AI tools instead of humans.
Yeah, sounds really interesting. It's a really exciting work. It seems so critically important right now.
Absolutely. But as a next step, though, and that's where the continuation of this project is, what we really want to do, we want to give advice to managers, want people to better understand how to interact with these systems.
Right. So what does that sound like? Give it to us.
Research is still ongoing. I think at a very high level, what there are certain biases that the systems do not have. That is, they are sort of behaving as rational humans should behave. There are certain biases where they behave much like humans we see kind of in the wild, quote unquote, right? But most interestingly, there are situations where they behave differently from both rational humans and the actual human behavior.
Well, I mean, we laugh, but like managers are standing by wondering what the heck, like what should we be doing and what tools should we be using? And I mean, of course, we're on episode 6 of the series and we've addressed some of these issues throughout, but certainly, we don't have any firm answers yet. It's still a work in progress.
Yeah. And I think the other part of this is what was interesting is that in some cases where the tool got it wrong, where ChatGPT gave a wrong answer and it looked very convincingly right, but the math or the logic was actually wrong. And so I think that is a red flag in that, you know, where do managers, how can they know when the answer is not correct? And when developers are developing these systems, right, and, you know, taking the generative AI technologies and using them in their organization to be able to test for these, I think we're actually going to see testing as a completely different thing from what we've known in the past, where we're going to have to be sampling and resampling and testing across different systems. It's going to change, but I think that's, again, where we need to have some caution that it's not always going to give us the right answer, but how do we know when it's not?
Right. And so if workers are fearful of AI, is collaborating with AI systems, would it be seen as less fruitful than if they're optimistic about learning new ways of working?
Well, just to add on to that, and this is, again, from my own personal experience, so how I've been using ChatGPT in the past couple of months is when I'm doing some programming. And so I may ask ChatGPT a question and I can very readily check to see if it's right, meaning I run the code. If it doesn't work the way I think it should be working, I go back to ChatGPT and I say, hey, that didn't work. What went wrong? And it actually realizes it made a mistake and it gives me another answer, or I go to other resources. But it might be that we have to be, as we're moving into these different applications, you know, be risk aware of what we're doing and having some safeguards on so that we're not making large wrong decisions. So I think to sort of have that hat on, that lens on, and expand, you know, again, in a risk averse or a risk conscious way.
Right. So as Anton says, augmenting my intelligence, not replacing it.
I would actually say that in my mind, there will be waves of how this would work. And so at the beginning, there probably will be kind of small things that are changing. But realize that over the longer time, I think the big things will change. And let me just kind of pause a controversial point. Now, why do we need browsers? Why do we need an internet browser? And why do we need a website? Let's say, why do I need an Air Canada website? Because my brain cannot directly interact with Air Canada's reservation system, right? And that's why I need a computer browser to go there, then I need their website to show me, to ask me where I want to go, what the price would be, what kind of seat I want to have, and so on, right? But of course, none of that is necessary if I can ask ChatGPT, hey, I want to go here, right? When are the best times for me to leave, right? And so on and so forth. And it will just interact with the reservation system over here and directly, completely bypassing browser. That is completely bypassing this kind of ad serving capability that Google now lives from and all the other websites, right? Completely bypassing the website to begin with, right? Air Canada has no way of interacting with me directly. It does not, cannot show me a little banner of where, kind of what the exciting destinations are. All the people who are working on designing that website and updating that website become potentially irrelevant and so on, right? So this is the kind of human and AI collaboration that can kind of cut the complete slices of the world that we know it, but ultimately will make things more efficient, right? Because again, if this type of tool is my let's say more like a personal advisor, right? They would know what meetings I have on that day, when do I need to be at my destination. So it will be able to kind of guide me or help me select a flight that is, let's say, more, perhaps more relevant for me without me needing to think about it very much.
Yeah, and if I can just add on to that thinking, is that if we think about this in our enterprise systems, right, the systems that we're using, in organizations to run the organizations, could we also see a similar interface, right, where we see a ChatGPT interface over top of our SAP systems, for example, our accounting systems, our logistics systems, that will allow us to interact more in natural language, to inquire about things, or to actually get tasks done where we're not actually maybe typing things directly into field. We're having ChatGPT do that for us based on some input that we give it, and it might even be able to complete many of the transactions that we're doing. So that's, I think, another area that's down the road somewhere, potentially.
Right. So do you think, both of you, that we have enough information to give advice to organizations on how to purposely design effective human AI collaborations? Because right now we're learning how to use the tools to our benefit as humans, right? But are we purposely designing effective human AI collaborations? Are we ready?
I don't think anybody knows the answer to this question, to be honest. What I think is very clear is that being more knowledgeable about this, right? Being more knowledgeable about opportunities, being more cognizant about risks. So essentially everything related to education and learning about this is fundamentally important.
Yeah, and I'd echo that to say that, you know, becoming more aware and informed and learning about these systems, starting small, right? Starting with small implementations, learning what are the risks, what can we leverage. I teach agile techniques in some of my courses, and so I think the agile sort of approach where we are experimenting, right? We're trying small experiments where we sort of have a limited blast radius, right? So that we're not really being exposed to a lot of errors and damage, and just learning and having, you know, knowledgeable people. So for example, you know, one of the things I think about generative AI, it is very, very complex, right? And it's easy to sort of see this superficial level of what we see it doing, but having a deeper understanding of what's really going on underneath of that, learning about prompt engineering, some of these new techniques, and getting these skills into our organization. So as we are adopting, we're just fully aware of what we're adopting, how we can, leverage it in our systems, thinking, you know, expanding our thinking too of what is actually possible, but becoming knowledgeable in the first place.
So finally, what do you think it is that we should be thinking about broadly as we think about AI-human collaboration going forward?
So where Ant and I started our quest, our research on human AI collaboration, we were really thinking about the fact that we didn't feel that AI would be replacing individuals anytime soon, right? Taking all of our jobs. We felt that the important questions was how can AI help knowledge workers, right? So how can individuals that are doing very complex tasks, how can they use AI to help them with a lot of the heavy lifting, right? We're thinking about, you know, for example, a doctor. How can a doctor leverage AI in and increase their what they can do when they have tools to help them in their in terms of the intellectual tasks that they're taking? But with the advent of things like ChatGPT, we're just seeing this massive general applicability across, I think, all facets of individuals, what they do on a day-to-day basis, as well as employees. And so, you know, again, that has having, and I think that was unexpected. We didn't really expect such a massive increase in how generative AI would allow natural language questions and, you know, writing and image creation to help us. And so I think, you know, organizations, managers, individuals, just understanding these technologies and how, and being, I guess, creative, right? Thinking out of the box of how they could do their work more productively, but at the same time being aware of where it's not going to help them. So I like to think about, you know, when you're asking a question, if you don't know what the answer is, be cautious of what the answer is. Because, for example, with generative AI, it can sound very real. There's a lot of risks, I think, out there too. So it's not just a happy, everything is good and we need to just embrace it. I think we need to understand all of the pitfalls and the downsides and the biases and regulations, et cetera, out there.
Okay, that's a good reminder. And Anton?
I think that first and foremost, we need to realize that the question of how humans should work with intelligent machines is perhaps the main managerial question of our time. We don't have all the answers. We don't even have all the sub-questions. But if we keep that in mind, that, you know, we spend hundreds of years learning how to work with other humans. We spend hundreds of years learning how to work across different cultures, the questions of ethics and related, you know, cultural issues, right? They all evolve, and our understanding all evolved in the context of humans working with other humans. Right now, we have systems that are reaching in their intelligence the intelligence of humans, and therefore we really need to rethink all of those managerial questions that we spend, you know, decades and decades, and sometimes with our evolutions, hundreds and thousands of years learning about. Right, we now need to redo all of that between human and machines.
And just to add on to that, I think when we think about the jobs that each of us do, many times they're very entrenched in those practices. And I think that's sort of built on what Anton's is mentioning, that there are certain ways of doing things. And I think with AI, that we need to sort of rethink how we do things. So just in the examples that Anton and I were both giving, Anton about how we are now booking with Air Canada, or how we're writing a letter, or how we're coding, or how we're doing our work, we may need to rethink that and how our jobs look with an intelligent algorithm in the wings, right? How can we leverage that algorithm to help us do our job differently but more effectively?
I think that's a great place to end. This concludes our series. I'm so really pleased that the two of you were able to lend your ideas and insights to this last episode. So thanks very much for being with me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Meredith.
And that's the show. I want to thank podcast writer and lead researcher Alan Morantz, my colleague Julia Lefebvre for her behind-the-scenes support, and Bill Cassidy for editing support. If you're looking for more insights for business leaders on AI and many other topics, check out Smith Business Insight at smithqueens.com/insight. Thanks for listening.